Hey everybody, this is the final, fourth and final part of the 2013 telethon recording. It includes a shenanigans and the follow-up live stretch goal that we did at the end of the day, a live version of our Box Office Poison podcast over at Crosstalk, where we talk about Super Mario Brothers the movie. Oh my goodness. And Greg Leahy is actually on both of these segments. I think you will really enjoy them. One last reminder from me, the donations box is still open over at NintendoWorldReport.com, and if you've been listening to these recordings and you've enjoyed them, please consider sending in a donation there and show your support for what we do and also for Child's Play Charity. And thank you again for listening. We will talk to you soon on a normal episode of Radio Free Nintendo.
I return.
Well, Johnny, we made it, man.
Most of us
Oh
made
my
it.
God.
It's happening.
Carl, do you want to explain shenanigans? I mean, I do like that
Sure.
on the telethon page, like the schedule, it doesn't really explain what shenanigans is. It just says a healthy dose of shenanigans.
Well, I believe that, I mean, as long as you get about 50 milligrams of shenanigans per day, I think you can meet your daily minimum. No,
It's
shenanigans
not very good
is
for your liver, though.
no. And never take shenanigans when trying to recover from a hangover. It will
Or
have
while
bad
pregnant.
results. Yes, exactly. Women over the age of 40 should not take shenanigans for fear
So
that it
what?
might interrupt. Anyway, to get off the fucking rail for a minute, shenanigans is shenanigans was originally billed as just a reward victory lap for me, really. Because basically, my role in these charity telethons is basically just to run background, let much more qualified, much more interesting folks talk for the most of the show. And shenanigans is basically just me being able to breathe at the end of the day and then just talk shit with my friends. And that's what shenanigans has continued to be over the years. We take live calls, we might talk about a few somewhat relevant topics here and there, but really shenanigans is much more of a free-flowing conversation in which we can just kind of all exhale and decompress at the end of the day, and the listeners can
Which
participate in
makes it
that.
super weird that it's not the last segment this year.
It is, right? Yeah. Although I have a great
'Cause a lot of
segue.
times shenanigans goes beyond its time limit where it's like, fuck it, I don't care, let's just keep
Yeah, fuck
going.
it. It's shenanigans. Who gives a shit? No, I mean,
This
it's
year we gotta talk about the Mario movie, so I mean we're on a tight schedule this time.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
That's an
No.
all-day project. Talking about the Mario movie.
There's a
Yeah.
deep psychological profile that needs to be performed on that
Oh,
film.
man.
I have
But
so much to say. I can't wait.
I'm glad though that Ty can get back on, because Ty and I haven't been on a podcast in probably maybe, oh geez, maybe 6 years.
Yeah.
Been a
Ty was
while.
on a single episode. Ty was on a single episode of RFN while I was still hosting. It was maybe the most difficult guest I've ever had.
I remember
Sounds
that
about
day
right.
clearly.
Yeah, because I was, because obviously, you were living in Japan as you do now, and I was trying to get you to just give something up, anything at all, and you were just giving me these two-word answers. And
Oh,
then when
yeah.
I was just trying to develop some sort of context or frame of reference for the listeners, and I think I asked you something like, "Oh, so before this, you lived in America," and you just replied, "That's correct, officer."
Oh, you magnificent bastard.
Yeah, and I remember after that appearance, I don't know if I was talking with you, Carl, or just someone who was listening to it, and they said, like, is Ty okay? Is he normal? Is he like, what's wrong with him? And I said, no, he was just making fun of Carl. That's just
Yeah, no, for
what
sure.
Ty does.
And it was hilarious. Do we have Greg on the call?
Ahoy, hoy, everyone.
Hey.
So it's especially great to have Greg back on, because I don't think I've talked to Greg in a long time as well.
Me
It's been quite a
neither.
while. Yeah,
Yeah, I
we
think
could. I think all of us are under dosage for Greg Leahy. Under our daily recommended dosage of
Now you're about to have it shoved
everything.
down your throat.
But Greg, it's awesome to have you on, man. And I'm sure that once we start taking listener calls, I'm sure they'll have many questions for what you've been up to in the interim.
Spoiler alert, not that exciting.
Well, actually, my question for Greg is how did Radiant Silvergun treat you after all those years of waiting to play it?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. I've not really played it as thoroughly as like I did Ikaruga at the time or anything. It's like a foot traffic effect. I don't really have much else on my 360, so it's very rarely that it's like I've got the console on. And I think, oh, what shall I play? Oh, I'll play that. You know, it does. So it's not been. I haven't played it to death yet, but this sure. time.
You just watch the anime intro, and then you know you're good.
Scratches the itch. And did you ever get to try Shadow Complex? Anime intro.
The Shadow Complex I haven't done yet. I haven't 360 stuff. I have not played that much of. So like I said, I've just never. I got a few like treasure stuff with the points card that you shipped to it with me. And then sure. other than that, I did the Walking Dead game when it was really cheap.
Yeah,
that's about it.
That game's phenomenal. Really, really good.
Where the hell is Lindemann?
Who is John Lindemann?
Good question.
Lindemann, get in here.
And started thinking about Falcons football. And
have I ever told the story of the first time I've met John Lindemann? Have you ever told that story on the podcast?
Isn't that the one where your brother was being protective?
I'll tell the story. So the first time I met John Lindemann, I was 18 years old.
Oh God!
And I was visiting Atlanta, where my older brother Gus lives. And
was
so
only 18 years
exactly.
old.
Exactly. I was only 18 years old.
Yeah, that was my horrible like 100-year-old Michael Caine impression.
That was there. Sorry. I thought that was your old Southern gentleman voice.
Yeah. No, that's what it sounds like when I try to do a British accent.
Anyway, so I figure, oh well, since Lindy and I are just in the same neighborhood,
our resident predator now.
Yeah, speak of the devil.
Yeah, hey. why don't I just go, you know, record RFN over at Lindy's house? And so I tell my older brother Gus, and I say, hey, can you just drop me off over at this address? I'm going to go record a podcast with one of the guys.
Address in Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. And this address kind of far away, from where my brother lived at the time. And he was like, how old is this guy, by the way? And I was like, I don't know. I think 30-something. I'm not really sure. You know?
And back then, he probably was.
Yeah. And so, yeah, 31, 32, something like that. And he was like, oh, I mean, all right, whatever. And so he kind of had a look, kind of a puzzled look on his face, but he's like, all right, fine. So he drives me over, and we get to this house, and we knock on the door, no answer. Knock again, no answer. Finally.
Finally, I come out in underwear, right?
Finally,
no, that's my story about meeting you, not his.
So finally, John emerges.
But that's the story of everyone who meets him for the first time. At PAX, he was just like in his underwear.
It's just kind of a test. It's just a test.
So John opens the door in like lycra shorts and a tank top.
You make it sound like, I don't know what you make it sound like, but that sounds a lot more salacious than you would think.
Just dead
like, not like damn good in a tank top. Let me tell you that, just for the record.
Just how much lipstick did he have on?
It was just gloss. It was just gloss.
There you go. Yeah. No, it was kept pretty tidy. So I go in, and there are like 18 cats.
Whatever, or two. Whatever.
I'm exaggerating. No, he was honestly totally normal, but just because my brother like immediately had, I guess, this instinct of like this is a raping.
Well, the thing is, he came in and like cased the joint though, right? Like
wanted
to have like some gimp set up or something downstairs or something, I think.
So basically, my brother walked the house to make sure that this wasn't going to be some sort of trap. Oh man!
I didn't realize the thing is I didn't realize all this until afterwards, and then it retro creeped me out. You know what I'm saying? It's like, wait a minute, hold on. I put everything together. And I was like, it wasn't that at all, Carl. I'm so sorry.
No. And in retrospect, my brother also realized, oh, I was probably too serious about that. But oh my god, what if that was at the time? I thought that was fucking hilarious.
Oh, it's still hilarious.
Still hilarious.
Oh, brother, this older gentleman invited me to play video games with him.
This older gentleman.
Oh man,
the chat is on fire right now.
I was 18, but that's the thing. Like, you know, I knew I was the youngest staff member by many years when I first started working at NWR or PGC it was at the time. And
yeah,
so
I think you were 16 when you started.
15.
Yeah, and I hired you. I take credit.
Yeah, you did. You basically sent me. you sent me an email about 3 months after I applied that just says, so you still want it?
Like, yeah, like that's not like what, like that's not creepy.
there wasn't
you have to realize, picture. Carl, though, we had been going through like applications and writing samples and stuff like that the entire time. I mean, it used to, in the old days, we used to get so many applicants to work on the website whenever we put the call out that we had to like reduce them down to like, you know, a tiny fraction of the original amount. And then we went through like a voting process and everything. And we like interviewed people, and it was a pretty drawn out process because we really wanted to get, you know, really spectacular people. And we didn't necessarily have like the best tools back then to, and we didn't always know what we wanted. And so that made it take a lot longer as well.
Sure. I remember my very first project on the site was the Louis Awards, actually.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's not a good place to start.
Everybody who's done that goes, oh.
Yeah. That was the very first thing I ever did for the site.
Oh, God.
Yeah. The 2004 Louis Awards. Yeah. Oh. There you go, folks. You can go ahead and check, that out.
My first project for the site. Shit.
Was it really? Oh man, that's maybe it's just what they were using back in the day to break people in.
I was doing community manager, and then I flipped over, and I think the first thing I did as features editor was, hey, guess what? Awards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the day. Those were the days.
We probably had a bad habit of giving that to the newest person because no one else wanted to do it, and that's not a good way to manage your staff.
And I think I later in the, like, many years later, I think when I was actually, when I left the site, when I left the podcast, I think one of the last things I revealed that when I did the tallying for those awards, I got it wrong. and we gave the award for best import to WarioWare Touched instead of WarioWare Twisted.
Oh, that's unforgivable.
That is pretty significant.
That's awesome.
Fraud detected.
Like, like that, the gulf between those two titles is so significant, we probably need to do a retraction 10 years later.
But anyway, I feel like I've been just jabbering for the whole 15 minutes we've been here, when I feel like really this should be about the return of for you guys to share as well. As obviously we've got Greg back on. Ty is also kind of a rare guest to have on this kind of deal. So,
it's awesome to be able to talk to Ty. I mean, I've known Ty since 2001, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds about right. At least in person.
And I haven't seen. I think the last time I saw you in person was at E3 with the DBG guys, and we kind of helped you guys get into the show.
Yeah. So yeah, I still owe you like a huge debt of gratitude for that. So. Whenever you ask me to do a thing, I always do it.
Oh, okay. Man, I didn't even know.
No. You told me, like, remember, Ty, you owe me for this one. Except you said it in a much nicer way because you're Johnny Metz. You're too nice.
I probably said it in, like, a much dirtier way, but that I thought was funny.
You owe me with your body.
Yeah, but... but, like, yo, you need anything, I know a guy. It's me.
Well, I've already paid off my debt.
Yeah, you need somebody whacked. Just, you know.
Over the years.
Oh, well, hold on a second. They might be taping this. The cops, man. The cops.
No, we're taping this.
Oh, that's shit. Right. There you go. Come on, Ty. Be a better criminal.
They can't.
So, Carl.
Diplomatic Carl immunity.
go ahead, Johnny.
Coppers.
Ahead, I was just going to ask, what did you have in mind for this? Did you have any subjects lined up? How disorganized are we here at the end of the day?
Oh, fully. So,
I've got one topic I'd like us to cover quick.
Okay, go ahead.
The retroactive stretch goal.
Oh, so yeah. What's it going to be? What's it going to be?
We don't know.
I guess we're going to have a live poll here. So,
let's argue about it. We have ideas.
Yeah.
What are our choices?
Okay.
We can see what the chat says alongside what's talking about it.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So let me lay out the situation here. We've been talking for a while about doing a live retroactive stretch goal, but we never really narrowed down the games until kind of like the last 24 hours. So Greg is going to join us for this. That was the plan. And so I think the five of us are going to vote on which game we're going to do. We're going to do the voting.
My Little Baby 3D.
And and we, you know, for live retroactive, the kind of criteria were, well, we want something that's accessible. It's you know, fairly easy for people to get because we want people to play it and call in and talk about it.
Yonoid.
Also, this is, I think, Greg, you mentioned that this is basically the fifth anniversary of
it will be. If we do it in the new year, it'll be 5 years since we did the very first retroactive.
Yeah.
Good.
And that is when we would plan to do it, probably in January sometime. And well, if we can fit it in playoffs, if not, maybe February for you guys.
I'll just say real quick.
Don't make me do the Jim Mora voice.
Someone just recommended.
Greg's the only one that might need to worry about it. We should. John and I sure as hell won't.
Someone just recommended that you guys do Killer 7. They already did.
with Carl. Kind of.
Yeah.
We kind of did it.
That's right.
Yeah, we got Carl and everything. We rolled out the red carpet. I had to borrow a PS2 to do that retroactive. I went all the way. I did it.
Oh, hey, John. John, here's one for you. Enjoy your massage.
I'm talking about that all the time to my therapist. Thank you. I have retroactive every fucking week for that.
Well, Johnny, that's your massage therapist, John. You're just like, could you do a little bit more like in the WiiWare game?
Like you did to that Grand Prix driver.
Red, blue, red, blue, green. Can't you remember a pattern?
So, Johnny, what are the options for
Okay, so we went through a whole bunch of considerations. But the other thing is for the live shows, just like with Majora's Mask last year, we kind of felt like maybe this is a game that that would not win a poll, even though a lot of people would say it seems like an interesting thing. Or maybe it's just in a series that we've never done before, like a classic. You know, so these are like maybe less obscure games, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And we called down the list to two games. And so right now, I think we're going to decide live on the air during Shenanigans which one of these we're going to do. So the RFN guys and Greg, we get the votes because we're the ones who are going
to
be doing it.
Shit.
But we'll be happy to be lobbied by the other people on the call and in the chat room. So the two games that we're kind of going back and forth between right now are Final Fantasy VI for the Super Nintendo, also known as Final Fantasy III, and F-Zero GX for GameCube. So – Neither of these series, so we've never done either one of them on retroactive for various reasons. You know, we feel like these are both fairly easy to get. And so we wanted to you know, throw it out there. And so we're going to vote now. And if you're watching the chat, there's a lot of strong choices here. So I figured we'd go around and why don't we start with John Lindemann, which one are you going to vote for?
Well, I suggested Final Fantasy VI for the main reason of the fact that, you know, it's an iconic series, and that game for the Super NES is kind of iconic as well. Definitely, you know, kind of the high point of RPGs, I think, the golden era of RPGs, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I just think that it's, you know, it kind of fits all the criteria that we set out, right? In that it's probably something that's so popular that we really wouldn't do a normal retroactive on it. You know, it's been talked about a lot. It's very popular. So I think something like this where we actually take time out from our normal, you know, retroactive kind of...
Our normal every 3 months.
Well, yeah, the kind of games that we would normally look at that would maybe be, you know, a little bit quirky, a little bit less played. Well, this is something that's, you know, ubiquitous. It's been played to death by everybody, right? But it's something that we could probably, you know, go into and maybe pull something else out of, right? Maybe examine it a little more in depth than we normally would.
That's the hope, right?
Yeah, and also the fact that I just don't know how much we could talk about F-Zero GX. It's a racing game.
Well, we could talk about the Dumb Canyon mission a bunch of times.
Yeah, I mean, you could talk about stuff like that, and you could talk about the characters, but I just don't know how much it would lend itself to really in-depth dissection.
I think, for one thing, we've never done a racing game on retroactive, so we don't know how difficult – well, because we've always thought maybe that wouldn't work. But, you know, they have come up in the polls a couple of times, and I allowed them to compete because I thought, you know, I don't know how we would approach this, but I feel like there's probably a way. I mean, I feel like our group will find a way to say something interesting, and I think it would be a fun challenge. And I think as racing games go, GX is probably one of the best.
We did do Moto
Heroes.
We did Moto Heroes, as Donald points out.
Moto Heroes is really more of a vehicular platformer, and the racing levels were
not that good. It's still kind of like
It's in that. I mean, yeah, it's in the zone. I mean, it's not that far off, but for it's a not very an out and
special
out racing
retroactive yet. Though, this is going to be a very special one.
Oh, well, then enjoy your massage.
You know, this is going to be like, you know, this is going to be like Jimmy takes drugs and everybody learns something at the end of the episode. That's what's going to.
Wow. Okay, so that's John's vote for FF6, and I'm just moving on as quick as possible. Guillaume, what do you have to say about this? What's your vote and why?
Well, completely selfishly, I think I'd vote for Final Fantasy VI because I haven't played it since the first time I played it in the 90s, and so it's been a long time. I don't really remember much that happens in it, and F-Zero GX, I played to death back when it came out, and for like a year, 2 years into the GameCube's life, and I just... you know, like I'm sure that we could spend a good discussion on Dr. Stewart's ending. Look it up on YouTube. It's really something. It's really trippy, but you know, I think I'd much rather stick my teeth into an RPG and rediscover Final Fantasy VI after playing so many more RPGs, because Final Fantasy III was really like one of the first ones, right? And after Chrono Trigger, I kind of wonder, like, does it still hold up? And I killed the chat.
No, you didn't. Sorry, I was distracted.
It's like, what? Do you want us to answer that?
That was that rhetorical? I don't know, Guillaume. You tell me. I haven't played in a while.
So, Greg, I know you've played both of these games and have.
I have. I think they're so irreconcilable. I mean, apples and oranges.
Oh, yeah. They're absolutely completely
they're
different.
They're like apples and radiators.
Not even fruit close. No, when in fact, I always thought it was a bad expression, really. Fruit seemed quite commensurable, but there you go.
Rounded fruit, actually.
I'm going to say, come back to me last. I want to hear other people's arguments. I'm that on the fence about it.
Oh, okay. You're really torn. Okay. Well, I have a
non-voting argument.
I'll allow it.
All right. So
Court welcomes your brief.
Is this parliamentary procedural?
If the court will accept my testimony.
Oh no.
Ty did it. No. So. Yes. I think GX should definitely be the one to go. One, to buck the trend that RPGs always get it on retroactive, and secondly, because GX is such an interesting game, for one, it's probably the most polished F-Zero game that has ever been made or that will ever be made. It's sort of that same school
it may very well be the last F-Zero game that we get in America.
Right. Ever. Well, the thing is, it's sort of from that same. It's almost like a lot of the GameCube Nintendo games are very alike in that they're very much a perfection of the traditional gameplay type. And so, if you look at stuff like Wind Waker. It's sort of that same school where it's extremely traditional, but it's also very refined. And I think GX is in that same sort of school. So while yes, is it balls difficult? Yes, of course. It's very, very difficult. Does it also have amazing music, wonderful graphics, and a lot of really inventive tracks? Also, yes. Mm-hmm. So
I'm convincing.
As someone who cannot vote and has no way on this discussion, I choose GX.
Meh. I see that the counter for Child's Play, I don't know if it's just on my computer, but it hasn't moved up in a while. I might be convinced for GX, but it would cost people.
Yeah. I think if we do GX, I think people will actually start taking money now? Back. Mm-hmm.
This is the stretch goal. We've already extorted it out of them.
Do I get to vote? Well,
you don't get to extort someone.
I know we haven't talked about this before, but I'm sorry, but is there like any possibility for like two retroactives if, you know, people surpass themselves in donations or?
If we get to $8,000, we'll do two of them.
Oh my God.
Oh, right now, my vote is
Carl, you just volunteered all of us for something.
Carl, you bastard.
Yeah.
And by we, I mean them.
Killer 7, retroactive 2 coming up.
No, exactly. Two Killer 7 retroactives coming up.
No, I mean you really don't need to. We really don't need to do that, Carl, because we're gonna continue doing retroactive anyway. It's a popular feature. I like to do it. So, you know, I think, you know, I'm not saying we're going to do both of these games, but I mean, we will do a normal, you know, regular retroactive on the show fairly soon. I mean, probably fairly soon after the holidays, because, you know, it's very hard to do at this time of year with all the new game releases and people moving and going on vacation and, you know, and with the telethon planning, which is very intensive for many weeks ahead of time. It's just, we can't really do it. That's all. But we're going to keep doing retroactive anyway, so we don't need to make any promises about, you know, doing both of them or anything like that. Like I said, I mean, I am very, very pleased with the amount of money that we've raised today, and I just want to, I want to appeal to people to please donate even a very small amount if you haven't already, just to become a part of this. And right now we have 75 donors, which is fantastic, but I'd love to see that get to 100. You know, I'd like to – I really like the idea that, you know, a lot of people get together and they contribute vastly differing amounts, you know, of what just whatever you can afford, whatever you feel comfortable doing. But even if it's very small, just put something on the board there and become a part of it. And that's really what I'm – what I care about at this point, because we have greatly exceeded our expectations and our goals for this. So
yeah,
it's been a tremendous success, and the donations will be open for another week even after this. So once we get the recording out, you know, hopefully people will listen to that and they'll still want to donate. So, you know, I'm not pushing people hard to put in a bunch of money right now. I just feel like I just want people to throw in a little something.
Well, let's continue with this kangaroo court.
Yeah. So back to the question of retroactive, Ty. You asked if you get to vote. No, but I would love to hear your argument. I'd love for you to sway a vote or even buy a vote.
Okay. I will give you $30 if you vote this way.
We're not adding a fighting game to the list.
He can only pay you in 100 yen coins, you know.
There's actually kind of a fighting game character in Final Fantasy VI.
Right? So I can make a necklace out of it. Be cool.
But yeah. But you got to respect Falcon Punch.
Falcon Punch.
Okay. So like, you know, I look at two of these games, and I love both of these games. Like, you know, Final Fantasy VI is like it's the peak of JRPGs.
I think it's the best Final Fantasy. And I think it's, you know, it's very close to Chrono Trigger for me in terms of which one is my favorite JRPG.
Okay.
They're both two of my favorite games ever.
But, you know, you look at that, and then you flip the coin over, and you see that JRPGs are for girls.
And, wait, what?
And racing games are for boys.
For men.
I'm not, right? No.
Okay.
I'm not the gender police. I don't.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, F-Zero GX, this game is... it's crazy. It's a madhouse. Like, the flavor of the game, I would say. I don't know how to define this exactly, but the game is very quirky. And, like, they put in this huge effort into the game. Like, you know, Nintendo gets their then-eternal rival, Sega, to fucking make this game. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, from the developers of the Yakuza franchise, F-Zero GX, Monkey Ball. And Super Monkey Ball.
Yeah, and like at the time, that was like, well, what have we become? We're monsters.
But it's true that the pedigree of the game could be interesting to talk about, like more so than any other racing game, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. And like they have this amazing soundtrack. Like every character has their own theme song. Like quite often with lyrics, and it's all amazing. And like,
oh God, they had lyrics. Oh,
yeah, you're gonna have to play those all through the podcast.
We would, yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
So yeah, I'm gonna, like, everybody in the world loves FF6 and knows it inside out, and that's why I think you don't have to do it. You have to do F-Zero, and then get into that really weird shit that the game has. Like the goofy music, the impossible difficulty, and I also want you to like look into like some of the bugs in the and stuff that the game has. Like when you guys were saying, like, yeah, this is a really nice, polished, super good racing game. Like I come at it from a completely different angle. Like I start by looking at the game from like its highest possible level, as done by like super pros, like the end game of the game, if you will. Like,
where are you like, going with this? Yeah, no, I'm going to... Why are you just making up words as you go along?
Yeah. No, what I'm getting at is the game is really buggy, and ultimately, when you play it at the highest level, it becomes that you use that shifting glitch.
That's sneaking.
So, like,
so for you, a game's greatness is defined by its exploits.
Not greatness, but I would say how interesting.
You're supposed to say no, Strike.
Well, maybe.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, F-Zero GX may not be the better game, but it's more interesting, and that's why you should put it on your retroactive podcast.
Okay, thank you for the very interesting perspective, Ty Sugar. and now we're going to return to our voting members, and we're going to go James and then Greg. I'm only going to vote if there's a tie. I might tell you my preference afterward, but I'm not. But so James, let's go to you next. How do you lean on this? Have you been swayed by anything you've heard, or are you sticking with your gut
by
here?
Everything I've heard? So
sorry, I didn't plan this out ahead of time.
Really?
Really? Yeah.
So, what for me, here's where it's at. I love the retroactives where we play a game that's out there. Sometimes they're just – it's a disaster of an episode and we go, oh, my God, what did we get into? Sometimes they get really interesting conversations. The ones that I find the most boring are the games that everybody's played that aren't particularly out there, crazy, weird. Final Fantasy VI as an RPG when it came out is actually a relatively strange game. But the conventions that sort of have evolved from it sort of diminish the impact when you come back through a repeat viewing through the lens of 20 years.
I mean, it was very influential.
It is. And to me, there have been games – I know with all due respect to opinions expressed here, it is not the first or second best JRPG ever made. It just isn't. It may be – if you consider it only in the context of its time, where it was relative to its peers, maybe. But if you consider extrapolate through the history of the franchise or through the history of the genre, it's not.
Well, that's why we need to revisit it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you'd say that, James. You're not the biggest Final Fantasy fan.
Yeah, I mean, you can easily.
And that's fair. I mean, a lot of people aren't. But
I think they're overly conventional in a lot of ways. Yeah, like, I mean, just to give credit to our Daddy Warbucks of Child's Play here, he did repeatedly put in calls for Lufia 2, which to me is a much more interesting game.
Well, yeah, but I wish I could play it. I mean, really,
I know.
I'm not really into doing another Mother 3 deal. So
no, I know. I understand that. But yeah.
I would love to do Lufia 2.
To me,
I would absolutely love to.
I've played more interesting JRPGs, even that were contemporaries of this game. So I'm looking for something that's going to be interesting to talk about. Because for me, those are the episodes I really enjoy doing. I think those end up being the best episodes, even if they're not maybe the highest received.
So you're going
so
for
F-Zero GX, on the other hand.
On the other hand.
Is a Technicolor insane bowl of soup that you cannot eat.
Bowl of soup.
That burn your tongue.
You are so bad at back of the box quotes. Of soup.
Yeah, you need to let me finish. Like I said, it is hot and will burn your tongue off because it is hard. The thing about that game that is so unbelievable is when you're playing it and you're watching stuff just go by and you're thinking, wow, this is really cool. This is really fast. I'm having so much fun. And then about 30 seconds later, you fall off the side of the track and you have to start the race over again.
Get good, noob.
It's like, I'm not happy now. This game has this remarkable ability to just blind you with what's going on around you, giving you a sense of speed that doesn't really exist in other games, and also just the sheer desire of the game to crush whatever will you have to beat it, combined with the fact it has a story. It's an F-Zero game with a story that is as poorly told as any story has ever been in the history of storytelling.
Luckily, we have YouTube now, so I think we could discuss that part of the game without actually having to play it.
I know. That's how I know the story, because I can't. But
get good.
Exactly. The thing about the game, though, for me, that really is my lasting memory of the game and why I'd like to go back to it, is the car building mechanic, where you get these parts and you can build custom vehicles.
Oh yeah.
Because that stuff is really broken. I mean, it's real broken. You can build real confusing cars that the game's physics engine has no idea how to handle.
You reference exploits and tie lights up.
You can build
actually take that to the arcade and then race with your bizarre customizable?
Oh god, I just remembered. Did you guys see, like, not a couple months ago?
The arcade game's in the GameCube game, isn't it?
The whole arcade game.
Found it on the disc.
All of the data is on the GameCube disc.
That's really fucked up.
And you can get at that with either, like,
a GameShark, don't you?
Or through an emulator, I think. One or the other.
I think it's like, that game is so weird. Like, it just feels like, we're making this arcade game because of this Triforce thing. Yeah, let's make a console version, too. And the game's disc pretty much gives away that's what happened.
Triforce arcade system, yes. Like I said, this game is way more interesting.
This game has way more things to talk about.
Which we've just talked about on this podcast, pretty much.
Well, we haven't scratched
it. We've already covered it.
We've covered everything.
Okay, so where we stand now, we've got John and Guy both voted for Final Fantasy. James is going for F-Zero. We come now to Greg.
I've thought of a way to break my tie because, no pun intended, because I've thought about the fact that the main thing that you want to do with a live one is actually get people talking about it on the show so they'll be able to play it alongside us in January next year or whenever it is, and then actually call in and talk about their experiences. And the problem with GX, it's not that accessible right now. I mean, it's not, it's on the GameCube, so if you've got a Wii, you could do it, but it's not on a virtual service or what. So how's this? If you'll agree to my terms, I will vote for F-Zero GX. Can we do it as a combination with F-Zero X as well? Because that is on the virtual console, and it has Death Race, and loads of people have Death Race stories and stupid multiplayer stories, I think, from the N64 days, versus the GX game was not as much about the multiplayer and all that kind of stuff. So if we do a combo one of the two, I think put a bit more substance, then you've got two for F-Zero and two for Final Fantasy, which puts Johnny in the Darth Vader. I have to choose between the Luke and the Emperor. How will I ever choose? Spot.
Can we all agree that FF6 is the Emperor?
Voting against F-Zero.
FF6 is about rebelling against an evil empire, Carl. No, it is not the Emperor.
It's the Emperor.
No, it's not. Okay, so Greg votes for F-Zero with conditions. I think that's actually a pretty good suggestion, just because if you had, they're very similar games, and you could certainly play one or the other and speak eloquently on the topic, and it's not that hard to get both if you want, and they're not going to be incredibly long games because they are racers.
Could be surprised by GX if you actually try to beat it.
Well, sure.
it really depends on your capacity to quit.
Final Fantasy VI is about a 35-hour game, and that's if you know what you're doing. I mean, you could play it for 50. I think that sort of stacks them up. It makes it maybe it's still apples and oranges, but the apples are kind of orangish colored. Maybe they're a little
shouldn't eat those what? Apples, Johnny.
A little more directly comparable, or maybe they're blood oranges. Are those red? On the inside.
Oh boy! Just quit that. Red. Yeah.
All right. Let's just say no more metaphors for the rest of Shenanigans, because we are not. Yeah,
there will be so many in Super Mario Brothers. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, just tell us what you want, Johnny.
Okay, so I'm left breaking the tie here, and I'm gonna go with F-Zero. I think a lot of very good arguments have been made here, and I know that a lot of people don't like it. And that's another good reason to go with it, because I want to hear from those people. I want to hear you tell me not just that you absolutely hate F-Zero GX, But I want you to put into words. I want you to call in and talk to us and tell us why you
yell
us
the victims of F-Zero GX support group.
That's right. Yeah, there will be brownies.
And if you've never played F-Zero, any F-Zero game before, which would be understandable because a few have come out in recent history, you know, F-Zero X is a really good
anime.
F-Zero X is a good entry-level one because it is on the Wii Virtual Console and it's one of the easier ones to play. So we could get some of those perspectives as well, new players to F-Zero. So that's why I like putting that as part of the deal. It really helps the accessibility part.
And again, I mean, FF6 is one of my favorite games of all time, and it's a game I've played through many times, including fairly recently on Wii Virtual Console. And I could talk about it for hours, but I don't think a lot of the things I would have to say about it are so different from other RPGs that we have done. And frankly, I sympathize with the RPG excess argument. And by the way, I want people to know the reason we've had so many RPGs selected is because they are the most popular genre. Because we are democratic, we put a list of nominees out and we let the listeners vote on the games to play. And RPGs tend to win because people like to hear us talk about them, or they like to play them and record their thoughts. And I think a lot of those are people who didn't play it the first time, but they've heard about it because these games become legend over time, and they want an excuse to go back and play it. So, I mean, there's a good reason that RPGs are popular on this feature, but I think, you know, I'm always happy to take an out where we can talk about a different kind of game. And especially in this case, it's a kind of game that we haven't done on Retroactive before. So, I think it's a risk, but that's what makes it fun and exciting. And you know, I don't even have a GameCube or a Wii right now, so I have to like go out and find a system to even play F-Zero GX. So this is a much more hassle for me personally, and probably for some other people. But I also think it's worth it.
John, if you're gonna troll, do it on the call.
It'll be great to come back and do it. So, hey, so that's what it's going to be. We'll do the combo of F-Zero X and GX. I think that's a really fine idea, and you can play either or both for this feature. And we'll try to schedule that for maybe sometime in January, like mid-January or maybe February. So we'll let you know in plenty of time, and we'll have a really good time with it.
It is a good game, even though I didn't vote for it. I'm excited to play it again.
It's really
already
good.
Well, so now that we have on the air had a little internal staff meeting and talked about what we want to play, I
believe it or not, people, it probably went faster that way than if we had just kept doing it over email. So
it was probably the most efficient way. If we had done it after a call or after an episode recording, it could have taken forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would just like to intro someone who has been waiting very patiently while we you know, again, just jibber-jabber all over the place. Someone who's been helping out all day today on social media and in the chat room, Mr. Don Koopman.
Don!
Are you there, Don?
Yes, hey there. I'm here.
Hmm? Awesome. Hey. We can hear you.
Ooh. So I just want to make sure we at least gave Don a little bit of time to talk, just because, you know, he's been doing so much today to help us out, to get people to donate. And again, we are currently sitting at $7,106 and a single cent.
A single cent?
I have no idea where that cent comes from.
Yes. but how you doing, man?
Good. I'm very good. How are you guys?
Good, man.
Haggard.
Amazing.
Well, I've been sitting on my PC for the last like 8 hours with social media stuff away.
I just woke up.
Well, lucky you, Ty. Really.
Oh man. Yeah, it's been a hell of a day, man. I mean, I sat down in this chair I think today at about 9 a.m. Central Time, and here I am, it's 7:45 Central Time, and it's been a hell of a day.
Actually, I can say I had the longest day of any other people, because my day actually started at like 8 o'clock last night when I started writing the Bravely Default review.
Ooh, what did you freaking do, Don?
Well, any sort of
you and your European 3DS games?
any details that you would like to tease on the show?
Well, I've been writing it all night. I've been playing it all week, so it was kind of a hellhole because I wanted to get this one so quickly as possible out of the door. But no, I've been...
You didn't really pay to make the game go faster to reduce that hell, did you? with some of that deal. It doesn't work yet, does it? Because they haven't got the shop up, right? But you know it's in the game. Yeah.
I kind of did it as many times as I could juggle. And the good thing being that I had like one entire weekend to start with and then played through the rest of the working day. So it went all well and good in the end. But I also had the other reviews of like Zelda and others still to juggle through. So that was a fun week. I think I published every single day something on NWR this week, which is kind of incredible.
That's awesome. And hey, folks, if you're not reading NWR every single day for the latest and greatest on Nintendo News.
This is my segment, Carl.
What are you doing? And you're actually proud of that, James.
Stick to the script.
I don't know. Lately, Greg.
Hey, James, I must say, I feel for you concerning the case of Professor Layton.
Oh, it's freaking awful.
Oh man, I just had a window into what if we did Now Playing Live. That would be so weird.
I tried to get us to do it, but I was told no, that's not happening.
I would have done it. You would have had my vote.
It's hey Carl, we really don't need to because it'll sound exactly like it does on the show every week.
Yeah.
So just a broken mess. We don't do a whole lot of editing on that segment.
Oh man. Also, anything else you wanted to bring up, Don, while we've got you here?
No, I got a question for Don.
Sure.
How is Bravely Default? Do you like it?
Yeah. Should it just spoil my score?
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
9.5.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
9.5. Okay. Can you back that up? I mean, you're not just bullshitting.
Yeah, but I can also tell you the one thing I don't like about the game that stopped me from giving it a 10.
It's just too good. That's the problem.
No.
It usually is.
I don't know if you guys read the news over the last couple of weeks concerning like the Japanese version of Bravely Default for the sequel. They introduced a new mechanic called Bravely Second, which allows you to attack at any time while using a thing called a speed drink. You can replenish this by putting your 3DS in sleep mode for 8 hours. Or buying a drink from the Nintendo eShop as a microtransaction.
Oh, Square, you bastards.
Oh, that's so lame.
But isn't this version of Bravely Default much, much faster paced than the original one that came out in Japan? So, isn't that enough? I mean, it sounded like Square made it more, you know, like took it from an 80-hour game to a 30-hour game.
But it seems like such a bullshit feature to include because of two reasons. One is that the difficulty settings in the game can be tweaked at like any rate that you want, which means you can put at easy, normal, and hard at any moment in the game. And the most interesting thing is that you can set the encounter rate like 100% up, or like you can completely turn it down.
See, that's actually a big deal for me personally. Is that if I don't want to deal with a million encounters for a while, maybe I just want to get somewhere, being able to turn it down is a big deal.
Yeah. So for me, it's a very streamlined RPG, especially also like he just mentioned, like the speed up of the battles, which is something introduced. You can speed up like the battles like 2x4, and you can go like feel the minor battles like feel really in main and like not very important, which is also nice to just have those encounter rates like turned down when you don't need them. But it's a very good game. It's an extremely good game. It's like the final big game I have to review for this year.
Did you play Four Heroes?
I did play Four Heroes. I didn't like it as much as this one.
Okay.
Because I feel that some of the job stuff was not really well balanced.
Oh no, it wasn't balanced at all.
No, it wasn't. And I feel that the variety is more here. There's more. The upgrading system goes way smoother with the job and system in place. And there's a lot more tweaks you can do with like adding items to it and make your own tweaks, which is very intriguing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I'm excited. I've been excited to play it for a long time. So appreciate your thoughts on it. I will definitely be reading your review on the site. Definitely.
Thank you.
And Don, thank you for not only all you've been doing today on social media, but thank you for coming on and talking to us.
No problem.
Alrighty. So I think
get some sleep.
We got time for another one. Get him on here.
Yeah. All right.
I mean,
so
we don't have to start Bob immediately on schedule. It's the last segment.
Also, go listen to my Steamboat Dick interview.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes.
We will.
Oh, Don, you've had about that. Yes. Incredible this, coverage of that game.
It, yeah, it is.
I mean, really, the first interview you did, I think I was on the way to Europe when – no, that was before that. I don't remember exactly what I was doing, but I think I was traveling and listening to it, and I was playing it at the same time. And it just made me appreciate so much more just hearing the guy talk about the ideas for the game and, you know, how it was doing and how they kind of built on the stuff before. And you could really tell they're very intelligent people, and they put a lot of creativity and intention into the design of SteamWorld Dig. And that's why it turned out so well. So I'm really excited for what they do next.
Yeah, awesome. It's I know a bit more than many of other people because they told me a bit more about it. But sadly, I can't say anything about what they're going to do. But it's very interesting stuff.
Cool.
Very cool. All right, well, thanks for calling in, Don.
Yes, sir.
No problem.
All right, so I think we've got Tom on the line now. Tom, are you there?
Hi.
Hey, hey buddy. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. It's pretty late here. But, yeah, I was disappointed not to be able to participate this year. But just want to say, like, congratulations to you guys. It seems like every year you're getting more and more donations for this thing. So it's kind of validating to know that there are people out there who are actually, you know, reading the site, because sometimes writing for it,
Is anybody out there?
Neil's exploding right now into a fireball.
Is this mic on?
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, cool, man. Did you have anything specifically you wanted to talk about or bring up or ask?
I don't know. I probably don't want to take too much of your time because, you know, you've got this retroactive on a film that I've never had the pleasure of seeing. But
hopefully we can paint a picture in your mind.
Hopefully they dissuade you from ever seeing it.
No, yeah. Tom, I have a feeling you will want to see this movie after you hear us talk about it. One way or the other, I have a feeling you'll be compelled.
Yeah, it's
a weird movie,
to say the least.
Yeah, and I'm very excited to start talking about that pretty soon. We're coming up, we've got a little bit of time left here in Shenanigans before we transition on over. So I think you know, this is usually the time of day where if there's anything that from the day that we've sort of had to leave very early, you know, and sort of want to pick back up very briefly. I think the one thing that we sort of had to rush out of very quickly was the Wii U report card.
Yeah. We had so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That really could have been a 2-hour segment. I mean, honestly.
Yeah. And, I mean, 3DS was so easy to pack into their report card because it's like everything got an A or a B and everybody pretty much agreed. And at some point, it's just listing off all the awesome games that they played all year on 3DS. And with Wii U, it's so much more nuanced and
contentious.
You know.
But I would love to know, sort of as a sort of a blanket score, it would be very appropriate for Greg to give his first year Wii grading, because the very first episode of RFN that Greg was on was the first year of the Wii report card.
That's right, yeah. I remember that's exactly right. So yeah, very well done, Carl. I appreciate someone else who knows his RFN history. It's always nice.
I do quite a bit.
I mean, it depends what, you know, from what obviously you had the various categories that you broke it down into in the segment earlier on. You know, I mean, for me, it's like very much Tale of Two Halves. The second half has been pretty good of this year from a personal point of view, like the stuff that I've played, you know, going with, especially like Wind Waker, Wonderful 101, and now Mario's next week over here. It's kind of killing me that is now. But, you know, and some of the digital stuff, really enjoyed Toki Tori 2 and all. It kind of really took off in the second half of the year. First half was a lot more sparse. So, I mean, for me personally, just like personal experience, you know, it's still a bit incomplete without Super Mario 3D World, but I'd be willing to give it a sort of a B minus as an experience. So that's like very split between the first half and the second half.
Yeah, I mean, nice. I can see that because the first half is the abyss staring.
Yeah, I mean, that was thankfully a little bit shorter for me because I didn't get one straight away.
Right.
I mean, it was like a couple of months after launch, so that got truncated somewhat as well.
Well, I mean, in his defense, it was still in the launch window, so.
John, according to Nintendo, it's still in the launch window.
Exactly.
I think we were past that once Wii Fit U came out. No? Like, that was the last game that was supposed to come out.
That's right.
Like, yep. So, like, on the freaking Fit Meter.
Technically, Wii Fit U is not out yet because they're going to do a retail package of that. Right. It's only a trial version, right?
But I so want to see the postmortem. I so want to see what it asks about that game because on the Fit Meters, it's stamped 2012. And you've got trivia that the balance board gives you, and it's all 2012 stuff. So they really were expecting to release that much earlier than they did.
So let me tell you how the Iwata asked for that's gonna go.
Yep.
Iwata asked the question, the producer gives a sheepish response, and Iwata laughs. That's how that's gonna go.
Yeah.
So sometimes you get actual answers though. I mean, sometimes they're pretty good. They're surprising. I don't know.
We'll see.
So I didn't get to ever give my overall grade for that as well. I don't know that any of us did really, but that one just ended in a flash. But I actually wrote down a C for Wii U overall.
Down?
Yeah, I gave it a C.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, John, you and I can tag team this a little bit. You've had a little bit different experience with Monster Hunter, which is a game that, you know, it didn't really speak to me, and so I never got into it. But, you know, if you're a Monster Hunter fan – it's been at least a halfway decent year based on that alone, just because it is the best version of Monster Hunter. Yeah.
Monster Hunter doesn't speak to John. John speaks to it every night. Well,
that's the thing. I mean, Monster Hunter is sort of its own beast. I mean, it's really kind of – it's kind of out of the mainstream. I mean, I don't know. And it came up for 3DS as well, so – for
if
Wii
Monster
U.
Hunter can support it to you personally, then having, you know, the best ever version of it on Wii U, I think, you know, probably affects your opinion on the system a lot. And I didn't have that. For me, it's more pieced together from smaller experiences, you know, just like little games, eShop games, some virtual console experiences, you know, a few fun sessions with Nintendo Land, nothing spectacular or mind-blowing, but fun. You know, a couple of really good single-player games like Pikmin 3 and Wind Waker. You know, there was never a period where I went like weeks and weeks and weeks without playing Wii U, but there were times when I would go a couple months where I didn't play it much. You know, I mean, I never put it down forever. I don't really do that. I always come back to my systems and try to check in on them, but there were times when I really didn't play it very much for a while. But then they started, I feel like I actually kind of developed a little bit of a Wii U backlog once they started doing all the virtual console stuff, and with Earthbound. Yeah. I still haven't had a chance to dive into that too deeply.
Yeah, I should mention Earthbound was definitely a big one for me, and but once Pikmin 3 came out, it's been pretty solid since then.
I think it has, yeah. If it had been, if we'd been getting things at that rate going back all the way to the January, then this would have been a very different experience, not because, you know, the sheer volume or quantity of games wouldn't be terribly different, but it would have just been a more consistent user experience where it felt like there was always something I wanted to do on my Wii U, and that is the case now. It wasn't before, so, you know, I think the launch was okay, but then it was everything after that was just so disastrous for at least 6 months. There's really just nothing coming out other than a couple of download games here and there. There just really wasn't much at all to do, but over the summer, especially by August, I really do feel like it kicked up in a really big way, and I just hope they can keep up some of this momentum into the early part of 2014, because it, like, January. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, March. Those really scare me. I don't.
Well, they got DKC, you know, because that would have been. I think it's probably better that it's out next year than it is, you know, out in December.
That game made no sense coming out.
Because originally it was going to be at the end of this year, and I think it's going to be better. But I think also that may reflect the fact there ain't going to be much else. So yeah, if you're not excited about DKC for early part of next year, might be a bit barren. We don't know. I mean, it's one thing that I'm disappointed about is it's been several months since they talked about even just getting N64 and GBA games on the virtual console, and we're still not any more enlightened about when that's going to happen, or even if they've thought better of it or something weird. I mean, you know, so yeah, there's plenty of unanswered questions going into next year, and no update on Yoshi from the start of the year. You know,
Yeah, I wonder about that game a lot of ways.
Yeah, so we'll see about that later on. But yeah, I mean, I should make one big point is that the macro level point, off TV play, love it.
It's a killer feature.
Awesome. Yep.
It's it's just the more stuff they bring out that I could use with, the more great it is. So Tokitori, I've got one and two now, brilliant for that sort of thing. Even some of the more major games, like Wonderful 101, which is not ideal for off-TV play because there's so much stuff going on that not high-res screen, but still.
And it's
like, I've definitely sort of ended up...
Yeah, using both screens sometimes, too.
Yeah, you have to do the select button picture-in-picture thing, but it's workable if you play... What I've used it for is replaying missions. So that's kind of, you know, the first time I want to see it on the big screen, you know, nice and clear, and it give its foot. Yeah, it's quite a spectacular game at times. But then, you know, go to the off TV play to do some of the other kind of stuff. And I could imagine that in the future with something like X, you know, when you're doing some of the big story stuff, you'll do it on the TV. But then if you just go off doing side quests and whatever, the off TV play is going to be brilliant. So I just love that feature so much. I thought I would get a lot of use out of it, but it's probably in practice. But even more fruitful than I had initially expected.
Nice.
I really like it as well, and I'm. It doesn't. You know, I'm. I live alone basically, and I don't have a lot of people over. So you know, no one's competing for my TV. I have a TV that's always available to me, and even then, I find myself using it every now and then. Just you know, just for
well,
moving
you do
like
go
short
to the
distances
bathroom a lot.
The house. No, just for you know, just for like short distances, and sometimes I want to lie on the couch and not have to. You know, crane my neck or you know, for me, it's hard to play games lying down with a controller and a TV because you're at a kind of a strange angle and everything. And so if I'm playing a console game on the TV, I'm usually sitting up. But, you know, if you're being exceedingly lazy, as I sometimes am, and you just want to lie down all the way to play a game, you really want a handheld experience where the screen is closer to you. You don't have to strain so much to look. So,
well, yeah. I mean, I'll watch football. I'll play a game while I'm doing so. You know, just have football.
Has that quotient been going up during the season, John?
Well, it was early on. Thanks, Falcons. Thanks for your crappy season.
It's okay, John. It's okay. We're all there.
Yeah,
I'm not. My team's doing pretty great.
Are you still recovering from that catch, Johnny? You must be.
Actually, I was busy while that was going on, and I wasn't watching it live, and so I heard about it later. Yeah, it's insane. If you haven't seen the catch in the Auburn Georgia game at the very end, it's a Hail Mary for the ages. Let me tell you.
I guess don't teach bat it down in university.
that's pro level coaching, Greg.
You say that, but you see that Ravens Bengals game the other week. We did the exact same thing.
Terrible.
I think it was really a case of the ball ended up in his hands before he even realized what was going on, and so he just why take a knee now? I'm out in the open field, and all the other guys have run into each other. So,
I do want to say one thing I didn't get to say during the Wii U segment. And we're talking about, you know, we talked about how the games were distributed towards the end of the year. It's been quite heavy. But for me, the most frustrating part about the Wii U is the time I wasn't using it. Not just that I have this thing that's sitting there that I could be using, but I'm not. It was almost like in the way. It was a device that was taking up space that I had no functional use for. And I found that to be, for whatever reason, a tremendously frustrating experience. Once stuff starts to come out, It is obviously alleviates that situation, but I think that sensation, that thought process, that, you know, my Wii U gamepad has dust on it kind of thing is just a bad feeling that is going to take a while to go away.
Yeah.
And I think it colors my perception of that system's gear, and it makes it really hard for me to say anything but like a D. Because, I mean, it wasn't like, oh, there's a little dust in your gamepad. It was like, no, that thing is caked.
Yeah, dude.
You take
like,
this outside to dust this because it's gonna make a mess.
I just like store it like face down.
That's true.
I've been pretty.
Wii U pro tips.
Finish your thought. Finish your thought.
Okay.
Put a paper towel over.
Just very quickly, I guess I'd give it a B-. Like I have been liking the games. I have been suffering through like a couple of droughts, but I think that what brings it down for me is a lot of the half-baked features, like not really. I don't know. I really wish that Nintendo would bring up notifications on screen when you've got friends coming in or starting playing a game or sending you a notification to play online. Because there's, you know, that little light that comes on, the home button, when you've got a friend online or a friend who calls you, it, you know, it it pulsates all the time, and you there's no reason for you to actually check and, you know, okay, why is it beeping blue this time, you know?
Yeah, it takes you out of what you're doing unnecessarily. Yeah.
So I just wish that Nintendo would be more on the ball about that stuff. It feels worse than using the PlayStation 3, and I don't understand that.
Yeah. Heck, it feels worse than the games? Vita. I mean, Vita does that. Vita shows you when people come online.
Yeah. So fix that. And but otherwise, the Nintendo's games, I've been very happy about. Third parties, I've forgotten about them, I guess. And I have no choice. They've forgotten about me. I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, B minus. Cool.
Forgot about Gee.
Alrighty, folks. Well, I do believe that sort of brings us to the end of our of the regular telethon. It has been one hell of a day, and again, I'd just like to announce the current amount, which is $7,175, well over what our goal was of only $4,000. We got to not one, not two, but three stretch goals today.
To see us double our final goal by the end of the week.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. I mean, it's entirely possible for us to get $8,000 within the next week. I mean, it's only $825 to go. So, and really though, you know, this is a real team effort. Everyone really puts in their time. So on the staff side, it's definitely a labor of love. But we couldn't do it without you guys. I mean, not only just from a fundraising standpoint, but from a content standpoint. I mean, it really is understated how much of what makes the show good is you guys calling in.
Oh, it helps tremendously. I mean, it helps keep us from going off on crazy tangents, and it helps introduce new topics, and it keeps things interesting, and it's fantastic.
And I do owe a special thanks to Mr. Michael T.Y.P. Cole for being a technical hero this year, not only for doing all the awesome testing, updating the site page, hosting the call all day long, and just generally being around and being available to do whatever we needed. So real big thanks to TYP.
Superstar. And James has done a lot as well. So both of those guys really deserve a lot of credit for making this thing happen.
I want to point out one thing real quick before we go. This is Shenanigans. Clex Yoshi just mentioned that he has Demolition Man on 3DO and pointed out that he got it in a box of 3DO games from his father, which seems to be the way that everybody we ever talked to has 3DO games.
Was his father wearing a rainbow hat by any chance?
Did he mention that he's already seen this timeline before?
Oh, man.
Because that guy also got it in a box of 3DO games from his neighbor. Did anybody actually buy 3DO games?
That's exactly it. It's always like, yeah, my dad met this guy in an alley who gave him a 3DO. He was at a business conference that had 3DO next door.
Oh, my God.
It's the underground 3DO railroad. Just showed up in people's homes. And
there's your Shenanigans ending.
There's your show. Alrighty, folks. But so I think James and Lindy and Gee are going to be jumping off here. But so, guys, thank you so much for all you guys have been doing today. Really appreciate you guys. Were awesome on all your segments.
You're here.
Thanks to all you guys.
It's been a pleasure, gentlemen.
John, Falcons Bills next week is for all the marbles.
I'll be sure to email both of you after that game.
If my marbles beaten spheres of no worth.
My marbles being high draft picks.
It's worth all the empty bag of marbles.
Praise 3DO.
All right,
3DO.
And Ty, thank you so much for being on as well.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, it was fun to talk to you, Ty. You got to come back to E3 sometime and hang out with us.
Yeah, if I get half a chance, I will.
All right, excellent. Cool. Well, that does close it out for the telethon. So I think there's really only one thing left to say, and that is, in association with Crosstalk.com, NintendoWorldReport.com, ChildsPlayCharity.org, and listeners just like you, you're listening to Box Office Poison, the podcast all about movies and movie things. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda. And on this episode, we have got Mr. Jonathan Metz.
Hi there, everyone.
John Rind.
Hey, what's up?
Yo, dude.
Yo.
And Greg Leahy.
Hoy, everyone again.
It's Greg's first time on Bop and my first
time.
It is.
You know, when you started this all those years ago, I thought maybe I might end up on one of those one day somehow. Maybe someone else drops out or something. And then you think, maybe, oh, I'll get to talk about, you know, a David Lynch film like Mulholland Drive or The Elephant Man or maybe something by Kubrick like The Shining or 2001, and here we are. Reality disappoints.
We're actually doing Eyes Wide Shut in a couple of weeks, Greg. So,
boom, 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 boom. There you go. We did it. Knock yourself out.
Maybe not too late for you to achieve that dream.
Eyes Wide Shut, I wish mine might have been closed for an hour and a half this afternoon. But not my ears, because that theme song, Almost Human, is that what it is, by Roxette. Delicious.
Well, folks, if you couldn't tell, if you haven't been paying attention.
Playing attention? Oh, my.
Whoa. Sounds like something Luigi would say.
Exactly.
After he hacks a security system because he played too many video games.
All right, Carl slugged the line. I've got two words for you. Impossible.
So, folks, we're going to be talking about Super Mario Brothers the movie as a sort of impromptu movie of the month. And
impromptu. We've been planning this for weeks.
Yeah, well, don't let them in on it.
Premeditated.
Very much
the damage we're about to do to you.
All right, so we all watched Super Mario Bros. The movie, and man, I don't even know how to set this one up. So basically,
do you know the video game Super Mario Brothers? You know how it's like about Mario and his brother Luigi, and then there's there's dinosaurs.
Sort of. Yeah.
If you described the plot of the video game on a bare bones level, it'd be like two plumbers fighting against dinosaurs to save a princess.
Pretty much.
Sort of, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that's, I guess, what the movie is about.
Mm.
And the movie is nothing like the game ever. I did not know that Nintendo was like that into setting stuff in Brooklyn or that you could be a Yankees and a Mets fan at the same time, but apparently Luigi plays both sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, this was your first time seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, effectively, because that's why I'm so passionate about this. No. I think I might have seen a little bit when I was really little. And actually, while I was watching it, my girlfriend came in and she goes, "Are you still watching this?" And I go, "Yeah, it's like way longer than it should be." And she goes, "Yeah, it seems like it." And then she goes, "I think I saw this when I was little and then I shut off the TV because it was so stupid." And I go, "Well, you know what? I can't shut off the TV because I'm going through this for the kids."
So someone in the chat, our buddy Reagan, said, "I bet John likes Super Marvelous more than Boogie Nights."
You are goddamn right, Reagan.
Oh, man. So basically...
No, of course not.
So Super Mario Bros. Stars the immortal Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo.
Bob Hoskins in the biggest disappointment of his career, in his own words.
Yeah.
Yes. Actually, I think I read Super Mario Bros. Was his answer to three questions, and those were like, what's the biggest disappointment of your career? What's like the worst decision you've ever made? And what is one, if you could like go back in time, erase from time? SMB, baby.
So it also stars the not as immortal Dennis Hopper.
Yeah, well, you know, on that subject, though, this is actually not my least favorite Dennis Hopper film. That would be Texas Chainsaw 2. I find it even more excruciating.
Sure, I think Dennis Hopper is kind of amazing in this movie, but we could talk about that a little bit later. But I'm curious to hear, Greg, have you seen this before?
I saw it as a child and I forgot almost everything about it. It's one of those things that, you know, like there's a certain movies from my youth that I can remember in pretty good detail considering how long ago it was. And then there's ones like this that self-protection, maybe, you know, I just shut it out. So it was a rediscovery for me. This one,
it was for me too.
Rediscovery.
I saw this movie in the theaters when it first came out. I was 9 years old in 93 when this came out. It was like 2 weeks before Jurassic Park, if you can believe that. Both movies about dinosaurs and have so much in common.
I would love there to be like a double pack DVD of Jurassic Park and it's like both movies about dinosaurs.
Yeah, dinosaur genre, you get Super Mario Brothers, Jurassic Park, and Disney's Dinosaur.
Yeah, so you know, and as a kid, I have to say, I mean, I remember like waiting in line to get in to see this, and I mean, it was a big deal among a small group of people, you know, And actually, the first time I ever – I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast, but the first time I ever even knew that there was going to be a Super Mario Brothers movie was in 1992, I believe, when I was standing in line at Disney World to get on a ride with my family. And Disney, I think, had some vague involvement with the funding for this through one of their labels. And so they had a poster for Super Mario Brothers up on the wall, and I just stared at it. I couldn't believe that they were going to make a live-action Mario movie. And even as a kid, I'm thinking, I don't know that that's the way I would do this, you know, like maybe it should be animated or something. But I mean, from the poster, you know, it's just Mario and Luigi standing in side by side and with their legs spread out. So it looks like the letter M. It's a clever poster, I guess. But then you look at what they're wearing, and they have these weird like robot boots on, and they're carrying plungers, and it's like, what the hell? And I remember leaving the movie feeling that it was a very strange way to approach the Mario story. But I also remember thinking it was kind of fun. Like, I remember thinking it was like, you know, basically it was way more science fiction than I expected, but I like that stuff then and now. And I thought, you know, it wasn't the Mario Brothers movie that I would have probably come up with if you'd asked me to like write out a story for it, but I thought it was enjoyable. And then I might have seen it like one time later, probably a couple years later on video, and didn't like it very much. You know, I was a little bit older, a little more discerning maybe, and I was like, yeah, that really didn't work out so well, did it? And then I hadn't seen it again until now. And I had a very unusual experience with it yesterday when I watched it. But
this movie is so much weirder than I remembered. I think the people who made – well, first off, it's directed by like a husband and wife.
Yeah.
And apparently they were like total control freaks on set and would not talk about their decisions before they'd made them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I think someone just – because the script was rewritten like 15,000 times, probably by like 30 different people. And I think at one point they were just like, I had no idea there was a video game. I thought we were just making a wacky movie.
Right.
Because like so much of this stuff has nothing to do with it at all. Like
I think it's actually there's some extensive research on this, so I could probably go fact find this. But
yeah,
my sense is that the way that I tell the story in my head, at least, is that someone had an existing script for a, you know, somewhat generic, unattached sci-fi movie. And they had this interesting idea of parallel dimensions that were a little bit different. And someone in one world wanted to merge them together. And a lot of these sort of background elements, and maybe even the stuff about, you know, having a whole race of humanoids who look like normal people, except instead of from monkeys, they're descended from dinosaurs. I think that's a super interesting idea. Like on paper, like as the premise, I think it's really, really intriguing. And there's even a moment in the movie where King Koopa asked Princess Daisy's like, you know, when will you accept that you descended from dinosaurs? And it's like, what a bizarre thing to ask. How did we get to this point, you know? It's like we're having the Scopes monkey trial here in King Koopa's palace. And, you know, it's just a very, very odd setup. But I thought, like, as a sci-fi premise, it's intriguing. And there's probably a lot of things you can do with it. And I think then these same people, through whatever weird, you know, contract negotiations, they ended up with the license for Mario. And they basically had to find a way to put elements of the Mario games into their existing plot. And they probably did a bad job. And that's why it got rewritten and over and over and over again. And it just became weirder and weirder with every pass. But there are such blatant attempts to get in any kind of fan service, not in an appropriate way. Like, there are multiple plumbing action scenes in this movie. It's like someone told the writers these characters are plumbers, even though that's completely incidental to the video game franchise and could have absolutely been ignored 100%, and the movie probably would have been better for it, right? But someone told these guys in a room, hey, the characters are plumbers, do something with that. And they came up with these bizarre, convoluted ways for plumbing to be integrated into the action scenes. And that's how you get to where we're at, you know?
Yeah, you're like, okay, let's brainstorm real quick. What's an action scene that a plumber would be involved in? It's like, I don't know. They live pretty shitty, like boring – well, not shitty, just like boring lives. They just like fix people's toilets and sinks and stuff. All right, so let's make a huge sink with like a lot of loose screws on it. And then it'll be like a surgery where the guy's assistant has to hand him all these different wrenches really quick. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, that's not good enough. What if people attack them? I know, we'll grab a plunger off of the wall and plunge a guy's face. That's the part. I do not know.
I love the part where they're going down the slide on the mattress, which is like straight out of Mario 64 from 3 years in the future. And they he saves the day by shoving a wrench down into some arbitrary hole in the floor as he goes by. And that messes
into a
up.
Spike strip for a mattress.
Yes.
Like, what? And, all right. So do Mario and Luigi in any Mario game like that came out before this movie was made use a plunger?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to check real quick.
No, that's part and parcel original about this movie. So I think
can't knock it for its derivativeness.
So I
know the hot plunger action is wholly original.
I have an alternate theory for this movie's plot. My theory is that it's like a game of telephone where someone told them what Mario was about.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's like these two brothers, these two Italian brothers, and they go into pipes, they fight dinosaurs, they save a princess. There's like a really big dinosaur that they fight. And some guy's like, oh, weird. Okay. And then didn't look at the game to see that it's like really kind of kid friendly and colorful. And was like, man, that sounds fucking dark.
Yeah. I think you and I actually are pretty much on the same page there, Carl. I think there was something was lost in translation between the property holders at Nintendo, who clearly were not very involved with the production of this movie, and the people making the movie. And they kind of were talking across from each other, and they never really connect. They never really understood what each other wanted.
Yeah. Well, I think and the other thing is like, why were the humans hatching out of eggs?
No. They're not humans. The princess was because she's descended from dinosaurs.
She's not a human.
You're not even paying attention, Carl.
No, but like it doesn't make any sense for humanoids.
They're descended from reptiles. Oh, reptiles hatching out of eggs all of a sudden doesn't make sense, Carl.
Well, okay, so
are you kidding me?
I think we should lay some context here, which is that in the 80s. I think the 80s were kind of the first time in America that the theory of evolution and natural selection from Darwin was becoming more or less accepted, and it was actually being taught in elementary schools. I mean, a lot of that stuff was resolved legally in the early 20th century, but by the 70s and 80s, it was fairly common knowledge. People generally understood it, and there was a lot of research in the 70s on chimpanzees and behavior and their learning capabilities and things like that. And so there was a cultural awareness that people understood that humans come from apes, from primates. And it was also becoming such common knowledge that you started to get the pushback from it, both from, a certain political and religious segment in the culture that pushed back on this, and they fought very hard and they developed alternate approaches and theories and things like that. But also it became kind of a pop culture joke, like the idea that people come from monkeys, it became like a very easy kind of go-to joke. And so I think what happened here is – I think it's weird that it happened in a children's movie of all things that Nintendo was involved with it, that evolution. I mean, the movie is almost completely about evolution in a way that just seems very bizarre for a movie that might be aimed at children. But I think the idea that I think at this point, finally, you reach a point in American society where almost every 8-year-old child has heard that humans come from apes. They know that that's part of their basic education. And so then the sci-fi twist is like, what if they didn't? What if some of the people descended from other animals? And, apes and chimpanzees and whatever other primates you want to point at, they don't look like humans. And yet it still happened that way. So if we could come from monkeys, why not a fish? Why not a dinosaur? It's silly. But in that consciousness, it seems not any more far-fetched than the idea that we came from monkeys, which was the joke.
Here's my question. If you can look at it both ways, one of them is, it's so like deeply ingrained and accepted in American society. Like it can be brought up as if it's just a normal standard, thing everyone agrees on, which of course it is. But what if you looked at it from the side like this is some secret creationist plot to show that humans coming from apes is fucking ridiculous, and we'll show you because it's just as likely that we came from dinosaurs, and everyone knows that fucking dinosaurs died 6,000 years ago.
Did you just slip into the voice from the instructional video in Jurassic Park there? Dino DNA.
Dino DNA.
So it kind of sounded that way.
Mario fell on a tree and got caught in the sap.
One thing, very good, very good. And one thing I noticed early on, I was looking at Dennis Hopper's acting as Cooper at one point, and he was doing this weird thing with his hands. So why has he got his hands?
Oh my god, that was incredible!
Why has he got his hands up by his armpits? Like, what is he doing there? Like, is he being precious or what? And then, of course, mentions that he personally was descended from the T-Rex, so that's why he's got the stupid little hands.
I thought that was surprisingly well done.
Like, shocking amount of thought that went.
Yeah, it was a small detail, but I was like, you know what? Hopper went for it. You know, like he's as method as could be in this steaming pile of Super Mario Brothers sewage, which only makes sense because they're plumbers.
Yeah. So the other thing is, I mean, are we supposed to be led to believe that they're actual brothers or they're just like
no, they're brothers.
They're brothers.
He's adopted.
You didn't see the resemblance?
In between Jungle Leguizamo and...
They have the same accent!
Which they don't.
Sort of. Yeah! No, they don't.
They kind of don't, but...
Thomas kind of all over the place at the time, though. It's not that consistent.
It's weird. This movie came at a very critical time in John Leguizamo's career and probably derailed it for a couple of years, actually. I think until maybe Tu Wong Fu was kind of him coming back into vogue. But he was like a really hot up-and-coming actor, and I love the like really gratuitous scenes out in the desert with him with his shirt off. You know, like he's almost trying to build up his portfolio for his agent.
You guys want to hear a fun little fact about this movie? So Hoskins and Leguizamo knew it was shit while they were making it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been told from them directly that every night on set, they just got shit-faced. Like, just to get through the process of making this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so bad.
Yeah. I mean,
like, could you just imagine Leguizamo being like, oh my god, we're filming in the fucking desert tomorrow. You know what? I'm just going to take my shirt off.
I just feel sorry for Leguizamo trying to keep up with Bob Hoskins. I've got to think his liver was way more tolerant.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, I mean, there are some things that I find, like, really cool from, like, a...
You've got to admit, it is like something from a child's imagination coming to life.
If that child's
question was picturing Bob Hoskins in a solid canary yellow suit, in a nightclub, nuzzling the ample cleavage of a big
Bertha.
I mean, if the child was imagining that while he was playing Mario, then it is a child's imagination come to life.
No, look, the movie has nothing if not for creativity. I mean, I honestly think, you know, you can make fun of it, and there's a lot to make fun of here, and there's a lot to just shake your head and just in puzzlement. But the movie is breathlessly creative and has no shortage of weird ideas and, like, very detailed backstory, very detailed production elements of, like, two little tiny dinosaurs fighting over a piece of meat, and that's how Mario and Luigi discover that they're not in Kansas anymore. Just really bizarre, really actually very fun car chase through the streets of, you know, Dino Hatton or whatever the city is called, Koopa City, I can't remember. But there's some really odd action scenes here that are honestly, I mean, you know, very creative, I thought. So I cannot hold that against the movie at all. I think there are a lot of very weird, cool ideas in here. A lot of them are not executed all that well, but it's not dull. It is not
apart,
at all dull.
The thing is, apart from the Vote Cooper signs and the Thwomp nightclub or the Bullet Bill's bar or all that, they just like, oh, it's got to do with the game because he is just a bunch of stupid science with names on. But like the city part, it could have been from any number of films from that time period.
Like, it looks like RoboCop,
did back then. You had a backlot or something like that, you know, and you just like, it was dark, you put some flashing sides, some people in punk type gear, that's a city, there you go.
Between Blade Runner, and then I also got Get Your Ass to, you know, fucking Mars. Total Recall vibes.
Totally looks like Total Recall.
Yeah. And not just, like, the story's the same as Total Recall. Super Mario Brothers is Total Recall, but, like, not rated R and with a little less gore.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. There are a lot of this movie. There's a lot of parts of the movie that are like strangely dark.
Yeah, well, not just – how about abducting women and like the like, – sure, you find out later they're not hurt, but they just like grab her. She lets out a rape scream in the middle of Brooklyn.
Totally.
And then they stick a fucking bag over her head and like take her underground.
Yeah.
Like that's terrifying.
So there's a part in this movie where – I mean, first of all, Mario was saying he's going to kill people left and right.
Yeah,
in this movie,
King
Koopa actually tells Iggy and the other Spike, the two Koopa kids, tells them that if they don't bring back the meteorite piece, he will personally kill them. And he looks like he means it because he's Dennis Hopper.
Right. Yeah, and then like there's a part later in the movie where someone gets electrocuted to death and then blasted into the side of a wall.
Yeah.
And Luigi says, "I guess that's one way to make an impression." And I'm like
that's begging for the bit from The Simpsons where Marge makes a quip and then Bart says, "Mom, someone just died." Like, it really was one of those moments.
Oh, real quick, did anyone notice that Dennis Hopper's wife in this movie, or whoever she is, is Dudley Dursley's mom in Harry Potter?
I did notice that.
Yeah,
now, she's quite a respected Irish theatrical performer.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Greg. This is America, baby. This shit doesn't matter. We'll put Hoskins in this shit too.
Very sad.
He thought he could make it in America with Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Then he wastes around 5 years and he gets stuck in this piece of shit. Not a chance, Hosk.
So, I mean, there's a lot to make fun of and criticize here, but I'm curious if I'm the only one who had this reaction, but watching it yesterday as an adult for the first time in 15 years at least, probably 20 years, I found that I was having a really good time watching it. And, you know, you guys know I don't like movies ironically, and I was actually very, very much dreading the experience of watching this. I mean, because I figured it's bad. Like, everybody says it's bad. I don't remember it being particularly good. I just remember thinking it was very strange. And rewatching it, I was laughing out loud at the complete absurdity and audacity of some of these lines that we've just referenced. And the movie has such a strange tone, and it is so unlike anything Nintendo would ever make. And I actually found myself really entertained. And I can't say that it's a good movie, that it's well made in particular, but there are aspects of it that are weirdly very high quality, like really high production value on some of the sets and action scenes and even costumes. I think some of the actors are really committed to what they're doing, and I don't know why. They're playing just completely strange characters that don't make any sense, but they fully commit to it, and I really like that, actually. I thought, like the Yoshi animatronic is super impressive still, even today. I thought that is a really good practical effect, and there's just a lot of aspects of it, and even the humor, I actually picked up on jokes that as a kid would have complete – I mean, as a kid, I'm looking for the slapstick, right? And that's kind of the level I was enjoying it. Or when Leguizamo says, "Yeah, it must be from playing all those video games." I mean, that's like a cheer line for the kids in the theater.
As an adult,
I think it's actually just very subversively hilarious. And there were a number of lines in the movie that I actually thought were really good jokes that are completely inappropriate for children or just completely outside of a child's reckoning. And I would have never appreciated before, but watching it now, I was like, you know what? This movie is a train wreck, but it's really fun. And actually, I thought kind of hilarious at a lot of times. And I kept thinking, why is Buckaroo Banzai a cult classic and this isn't? Because I think this movie is more fun and more interesting than Buckaroo Banzai. I would more gladly watch this movie again than I would go back and see Buckaroo Banzai again.
You know what? I got a really weird vibe from this movie while I was watching. I was like, you know what it kind of reminded me of? Brazil.
Yeah. Yeah.
With all the weird –
just the Bob Hoskins connection. Like,
yeah, but I guess instead of like – well, you know what though? Brazil does have like tubes everywhere.
Yeah. So there you go.
So I don't know.
It's pretty much the same as well, isn't it?
The same shit. You know what, Johnny? It's funny you brought that up, like adult – like lines straight for adults. Like when the two brothers get – evolved more, and they're just like calling Dennis Hopper out on being a fascist and like not appreciating the proletariat.
Yeah, well, the political dissent.
It just gives them better vocabulary, though. They're still just as bumbling.
Oh, that's they're really stupid. Like,
it's going to work.
Greg, I mean, that's a legit joke, like, to make these guys super smart, but they're still stupid. That's funny.
I guess it just wasn't that funny.
I thought it was funny, actually. Yeah.
I mean,
they just drilled that gag of how ineffectual they are so far into the ground. And then it's like, well, you think, oh, man, now it's going to be a little bit different. No, it's just with different clothes on. It's the same gag.
I actually did really enjoy Fisher Stevens playing very against type, especially for the first half of the movie when he's this really stupid thug character. This guy isn't short circuit. Like he usually plays the nerd. Like isn't he like the evil hacker king and Hackers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, just to see this guy play a heavy is really funny, I thought. And it doesn't work at all, but that's why it works.
When it doesn't work at all. You know what?
There's your poster quote right there.
Yeah, it doesn't work at all, but I mean, that's why it works.
I could say that for the whole movie.
Dr. Jonathan Mess.
Might be the most positive thing you can find that's been said by me.
The weirdly, again, kind of dark process for how they make Goombas. Or
they like suck their heads into dinosaur head, which is like just the physicality, the shape of those fucking Goombas is hilarious. Like as far as sight gags go, it doesn't get much better than that.
Well, faces that they make are so good.
Not only that, they go into the chairs, the size of a human. They get out the same size, but they're 8 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously two dwarves standing on each other. Like, that's what's going on. And one of them is holding up a very, very small dinosaur head. But I did appreciate that all the dinosaur heads were different.
Yeah, they were different.
They were all from different species of dinosaurs.
Apparently, though, the process by which they devolve into Goombas also gives them all the same outfit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You never see them change. They just come out with that outfit. Although, I got to be honest. All right. The one character when they get into Mars is then they see some guy. They see, you know, the Bob Dylan of Koopa Square.
Yeah,
right?
It's Toad. That guy is.
That's Toad.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Okay, that's awesome.
Because he's got like the sort of mushroom pattern on his head, even as a Goomba.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a swirl like a toilet.
And they call him Toad later on in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're supposed to recognize him because they give him the harmonica for some damn reason.
Right. So here's the thing. So. That character was like kind of sad, you know, like after I was like, man, you know, he's just trying to do his thing. You get shut down by the fascist, like totalitarian state that is like Koopa Square. I get it, you know, and then he's locked up. He gets de-evolved into a Goomba or I'm going to start fucking up with these names.
Yeah, it's a Goomba. Yeah.
All right, I'm good. So after they devolve him, they pop the harmonica on him and it's nowhere near any air, but it's always just like boop, 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 boop.
How good would the practical effect have to be for him to realistically play the moment?
Right. I mean, yeah, the mouth has one movement and it's open and close. It doesn't really shift.
I think you only hear him playing it when he faces away from the camera, though.
No. It's like as he's I think it's just constant while he's like just has it on. But later on in the movie, Princess Daisy escapes she brings her food when she's chilling out with Yoshi. I don't know what they're doing, but his tongue was all over the place. Anyway, so she's chilling out and he brings her a plate of I'm guessing it's tartar or salmon. I don't even know. It looked like some sort of
meat. Raw steak. Yeah.
Yeah, something like, and she goes, sorry, I'm a vegetarian. Could you maybe bring me back some steamed vegetables? I guess just to divert his attention, get him away.
Mm.
She escapes, and then she runs into him, and he got another plate of steamed vegetables because even though he devolved his brain, he's still got a heart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
still
he's like the Ricky Gervais character, Derek. He's just so sweet.
Oh, God. Exactly what it is. Yeah. He's a little bit
slower. You don't have to be smart to be kind.
Yeah. Right, he's got a heart of gold. That's the simple base level human emotion. He nails it. So not only that, he gets fucking lit on fire immediately after that. And I was like, why would you do this? Like, it made it so – and not only that, she abandons him before they get lit on fire. And then only after he's lit on fire, she didn't think, oh, I'm going to save this Goomba from his awful fate, being another mindless drone in this fucking Koopa society. No. I'm going to just run away. Oh, shit, he's on fire. Let me go put him out. And I was like, that dude got the shit end of this. Toad got fucked over so much.
Oh, it's worse than you think, John, because at the end of the movie, even after King Toadstool turns back into his normal self, Goomba is still a Goomba in that final shot as they're like waving, you know, in the goodbye wave shot that's at the end of every 80s movie.
I mean, didn't they just reverse the process?
They did.
But they didn't for Goomba, for Toad?
They did it for the king. They got him back from being the fungus.
No, they didn't. Well, they didn't have to put him in the machine. It just magically happened.
He just fell out of the nutsack and was birthed again. Once birthed anew with a beautiful, luscious coat directly onto his throne. Yeah.
Well, that's shitty.
Yeah, that's not shitty for King Toadstool. He's okay. By the way, who the fuck was – I was surprised they even put a face on him because I was like, what actor is going to be like –
Lance Henriksen just to say, love those plumbers. What?
Yeah, no, he comes home to his family and is like, so I'm in this new movie. Oh my God, really? What are you? I'm the king. You're the king in this new movie? Yeah.
If you have someone that's called King, even if it's a tiny part, it's like, it's got to be a recognizable actor, otherwise
right,
you won't
right. It's like, I'm going to be a king in this movie, and his family's like, all right, we'll all go see the movie together. And then after sitting through an hour and 40 minutes of this, they see their lovely family man pop out of this thing onto a throne and just go, I love those plumbers.
He's in it for 5 seconds, I swear. Yeah. And Lance Henriksen in the 80s and early 90s is a very recognizable movie star.
Oh, yeah. No, I recognized him even though most of his films were too old for me. But I recognize one of the few things I actually remembered from watching it as a child. It's like, oh, it's Bishop. You know,
exactly.
It's like Bishop aliens.
That's a big deal, you know.
That's the way your mind works when you're a kid, and that's the kind of stuff you remember. Like, not
that's the
anything.
Way careers die, Greg.
Oh, man. Well, I mean,
it's just so nuts. How this movie had a big budget.
Yeah.
Someone totally somewhere did. Believed it was going to – I think I saw it in the chat. It was like $50 million. Mm. Those were not bullshit, like, sets.
Yeah.
You know? There was, like, some detail going into – he had fucking rocket spring shoes. And you know, I'm saying I was going to bring it. You put the bullet bill in, and then I guess it explodes inside of your foot shoe – in your foot holster, and you just launch. Which I don't really understand what's going on there, but the movie had a lot of money. And
well,
someone
told the script room that these guys jump really high, and so they invented these shoes that, you know, the whole scene. I mean, Greg referenced it earlier, but the whole scene of you know, after the meteorite is stolen from them by Big Bertha, they go back to the club for Mario to steal it back from her, and in the process, she falls in love with him because they're out doing these exotic like dances out on the dance floor. It is. Just, I mean, I'm watching it. I cannot believe this is in this movie. It is so, so crazy. And there's, you know, and at the same time, the man is showing up and they're going to arrest them. And so in the span of, you know, the 3 minutes that they're dancing, when Big Bertha falls in love with Mario, even though he's already promised to another woman who's in captivity, instead of her taking revenge on him for very like blatantly stealing her meteorite necklace, instead she decides to help them out and help them escape because she loves Mario so much. The bouncer of the club, you know, it's just. Oh,
just where did that character come from?
No, the name is just a reference to the giant fish that's in Big Bertha.
That's right.
Are you serious?
But,
that's it?
But instead, it's a, you know, a large African American woman in red.
Yeah, how racist is this shit? I'm just saying, this fish has big, fucking huge ass fish lips. Because I'm sure the one in Mario is not, it doesn't look like a straight up fish. It's a cartoon fish with like exaggerated features. Let's cast a big, like, husky black woman who, by the way, looks pretty damn good and her chest is fantastic. But let's cast her in a fish role.
Yeah, I don't know that it was. I don't know that it was as overtly racist as you're getting into, John. But that is a way that you could look at it.
It is a way. I just did, Johnny.
I just think she's just such a great element in this movie that you would never see coming.
Yeah, she was great.
Well, we've got Luke on the line. Luke, are you there?
Yes, I'm still there. All 9 hours of it.
You've been hanging out for a long time, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm the Alpha and I'm the Omega. Yeah.
Luca, are you playing tomorrow? Have you got a game tomorrow to worry about and you're up listening to this instead?
Thankfully, I can rest tomorrow. Otherwise, I would be basically dead.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, do you have an opinion on the Super Mario Brothers movie?
Well, yeah, I remember watching it back in the day when it came out, and even then it didn't make any sense. I was hoping with the years it would be like a good wine and age probably, but it just wasn't the case.
No, it's more like McDonald's French fries where they stay shitty forever.
Yeah, they start shitty and
they
stay
just
there.
Stay shitty forever.
Start to finish, it's all there. It's all shit. I'm sorry for Bob Hoskins, but
I'm curious now. I've already owned up to saying I actually kind of like this movie more now, having seen it as a grown up than I did as a kid, and I'm on the record as being like I kind of like this movie. Just it's so crazy that I kind of like it for that. Is anyone else gonna cop to that, or did you guys all just honestly hate it?
I mean, the thing is for me is like I could enjoy watching films ironically a lot with other people, yeah. But I didn't get to watch this with another person, so I mean, it takes the sting out of it. Like, I don't tend to laugh out loud much on my own, or like that. And you could just bounce off each other like this, you know, like you could really enjoy. I think it's actually, you know, if you had a number of people that have some kind of context for just how inappropriate this is, you could have a riot with it, you know, but like by yourself it's not so much, but still it's just so unusual, it's kind of inevitably somewhat engaging, but at the same, like, you know, if he was gonna then, I think only in the rediscovery sense, like if he was ever gonna think about watching it again after, like once you've processed it as an adult, then it could be more just exclusively painful.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed it from a wow, that movie's really weird kind of thing. Where like just
yeah,
like
for
just
sure,
like
yeah.
I enjoyed it as almost like an art piece.
All right, you know what?
Like
take a couple of steps back on that one.
Like
bro.
Like there was like I walked into a museum and it was like a TV with this playing and it's like just watch this shit.
Well, actually,
you know what though? Yeah,
Carl,
go ahead.
There's a through line here to our most recent episode of Box Office Poison that we recorded. John watched A Boy and His Dog, which is an early 80s sci-fi movie starring the guy from Miami Vice, Don Johnson, and it's
70s.
Another
Johnson
movie that
was
is
deep
very,
in Miami Vice
it's
during the
very
80s.
Difficult to explain the premise and the plot of that movie. It's just so crazy. But I mean, John, you really like that, right? I mean, we really like these weird movies, and I think Mario is like more than just being bad. I think it is deliberately weird and psychedelic and just extremely strange in a way that really resonated with me. Like, and I don't like movies ironically. I don't like this movie ironically. I kind of just like it.
Well, I think that back in the day, we were expecting so much of it because, you know, games weren't so graphically expressive. So we were expecting a movie to be like what we thought the game would have to be, and it wasn't.
The game come to life. You know, that's what you would have wanted out of it as a child.
Yeah,
and it,
exactly.
And as I said, like it is not that. It is so
absolutely. But nowadays, if you take it for what it is, and you watch it for shit and giggles, I think it could be a very good movie in quotes. it would be fun to watch.
I think I
get what Johnny's trying to, because at a certain point, yeah, Carl's right. I was just like kind of blown away by how weird it was, because at first, you know, I knew it was universally panned and all this stuff, and everyone's like, it's not a fucking Mario Bros. Movie, whatever. But I was like, I was kind of just waiting to see how far removed from actual Super Mario Brothers it could get. I was like, it's kind of funny thinking of this, like, Mario and Luigi we all know driving around in a shitty, broke-down van, like, and Mario has to go into, like, a corner store and then complains that they don't have tap water. He's got to pay $3 for a bottle of Avion just to, like, cool off the radiator and stuff. Like, that's funny. And, looking at it from that angle, yeah, it's just, like, a really weird movie. Like, it's not completely bad because it's so weird. You know, it's not one of those movies that's just so awful. You're like, God, I kind of wish I never watched that. Like, I will say, I don't think Super Mario Bros. Is a great or good movie, but I didn't feel like it was a waste of my time.
Yeah.
which I think is a pretty big deal as far as like how I would judge a movie and stuff. But I do, well, first off, I want to hear what Carl thinks about the movie. And then I want to ask, is this the reason why there hasn't really been a good video game movie ever?
I will say that I appreciate the movie for its weirdness. And so I think that's I was satisfied in that sense. I had the movie up on my TV, and I was just like, I was looking at it, and again, looking at it not sort of compelled or put off by it, just looking at it as if it was spectacle.
Yeah.
And that's what this is.
This is the Caligula of video game movies?
Oh, yeah. It absolutely is.
That's a nice comparison.
And to borrow a quote from one of my other favorite video game movies, it definitely annihilates
all expectations.
I got a comment from Nicholas Bray, another staff member at NWR, but on Twitter he says, I thought for a while that it is a terrible Mario movie, but it's not a terrible movie. And that's kind of the way I feel about it, actually. I think the worst parts about it are where they try to tie in the video game franchise, when actually if they left that stuff out, it might actually been kind of cool.
On the other hand, like, part of what kept me engaged was like what sort of complete funhouse mirror twisted reference, like, you know, the Shy Guys look like they're at a kill zone or a ramp.
Yeah.
Something like, you know, a Big Bertha we already mentioned. That it's just like that was part of what keeps you going through some, like, you know, some of the more banal sort of bits of the film. Is like it's spiced up with these, just like, oh, they were going for that, were they? Okay, yeah.
The Mario references are really forced on the movie, but you can actually appreciate then. Finally, we see the Mario Brothers do some plumping.
Yeah, plumbing set pieces of that, as Johnny said. I wouldn't even call it
very elaborate plumbing scenes, actually.
Set pieces. probably the only plumbing set pieces in cinema history, I would assume. So, you know, that's something. That's a landmark.
Other than like maybe a random Charlie Chaplin thing, you know, where he's like, oh, this would be funny if we set it to music and we, you know, we'll do this. And who thought that was a good idea to make plumbing action?
I just love that they tried. The weird things that they thought were important, because, you know, Hopper keeps referring to them as plumbers. Plumbers, plumbers, plumbers. They just ram it down your throat really hard. Like, it's like, oh, that this is the essence of the property. You know, that,
and that's,
so,
that, and that's that, weird that, because in the, sorry, go ahead.
No, I had finished.
I just wanted to say that's weird because the plumbing has never been a very strong part in the game. So why choose that to be the thing you want to underline in the movie so much?
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, Mario himself isn't much of a character anyway. It doesn't really matter who he is. It's just your avatar while you're playing the game. So if you had to describe, that's why I don't understand why they decided to. Like, now it makes sense, you know, they decided to make a movie about Mario Bros. Because it's, like, the most popular game or whatever. Mm. But it's so unfit for a movie, especially a live-action movie.
Yeah, no shit.
Like, it's so ridiculously not suited for it. There's 1,000 other games that, even if they're shitty and would make shitty movies, you're like, well, at least that makes sense in a movie format. But Mario barely has any story. You know what I mean? Like, that's why, which is kind of why the movie is so ridiculous, because, like, I don't know why they did this. It's like, well, because what the fuck else were they going to do? Like, there's nothing to
do. You had to extrapolate a lot. They probably did it even more maybe than they had to, but yeah.
Well, you probably had to lock yourself in a room and just, like, drop 50,000 hits of acid and then just, like, get $50 million from some guy at a movie theater, and he's like, all right, whatever, man. And you're like, I got it. Don't worry. But if you're going to describe Mario in, like, two words, it would be Italian plumber. Mm. Or, like, red hat. You know what I mean? Or mustache. Yeah. Or high. Impossible.
Brought it back. All right. Well, Luca, thank you so much for calling in. And it was great to have you back on, buddy.
Thank you for having me, and congrats on another great show.
Thank you, and congratulations for making it all the way through.
Thank you, man.
All right, so we're gonna have one more person come on, and this is Sunny, who wanted to get to the last. This is the last caller we're gonna have on this year's telethon. And Sunny, are you there?
Sunny.
All right. Well, maybe Sunny might need a couple minutes. But in the meantime, any closing thoughts on this movie?
Hello.
Sunny, are you there?
Oh,
all right,
nice
there we go.
Man.
Sorry.
You sound really quiet, Sunny.
You need to get closer to the mic.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah, I'm here. Just my.
That's better.
Okay. Keep talking. Keep talking.
A little bit, yes. It's live radio, folks.
Okay. Just give me a sec. I'm trying to figure it out.
Okay.
All right. Well,
yeah. Let's go.
In the meantime, let's talk about how precious it is that they probably thought that Trust the Fungus might eventually become a cultural touchstone equivalent to Use the
Mario,
Force.
Trust the Fungus. Wait, is there any?
Whoa! What just happened?
That was like an audio explosion. Yeah, but yeah, there's
the universe could not stand for us to keep talking about this movie.
Oh man, Sonny, you're coming in but very, very low, man. If you can get closer to your microphone, that'd be great.
Or turn it up, yeah.
There you go.
Okay, now you go. There you go, man. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I just wanna. I think I was the guy that mentioned about the $50 budget, $50 million budget.
Is that accurate?
I think it is. To the point, I was reading David Sheff's Game Over like a month ago and. Pretty sure that was like the figure he gave.
Cool.
That's insane. Yeah.
I mean, I believe it. It does not look cheap.
No.
It really doesn't. It's weirdly like I said, it looks like it a lot of money was spent on it for some reason. And
I mean, it looks like a sci-fi movie from the 90s, which we brought up actually on BOP before. It was like a weird time, like late 80s to 95 or 96, where it was still practical effects for the most part. There is some CG in this movie, and it's actually pretty good.
It is, like, man. I really like that dimensional warp scene where he jumps through the. You see Mario kind of flip through the portal in the side of the wall, and and even when you see the princess and you see her face kind of merging.
That was pretty cool.
I thought that was really cool, but then like the weird scene of him flying through the dimensions and going over to the Mushroom Kingdom, it actually made me think of like a scene in another Leguizamo classic, Spawn, from a couple years later.
Oh,
had
God.
A pretty elaborate descent into hell scene that actually was.
Yeah,
very
but that had way worse CGI.
Yeah, it did. That's
famously
true.
Some of the worst ever.
Yeah, it was just pretty bad.
Michael J. White couldn't even save that.
Is it Jay or Jai?
I say Jay,
I think it's
but
Jay.
I don't know the guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
but he was the lead in Solo, which is an underrated action gem from 1997, I think.
It's a Mario Van Peebles movie, isn't it?
Son of a bitch! I knew it. No, Michael J. White is in like martial arts movies.
Because I keep thinking,
like Dynamite, wait. Most importantly.
Yeah, there Black Dynamite's awesome. It's you say Michael J. Black White, was like, wait, Michael J. like
Michael J. Fox?
Like.
He would have made a great Spawn.
Michael J. Fox?
A hell of a Spawn.
That's heavy.
That's heavy.
It's me and Michael J. Fox. This does have some Back to the Future kind of. First of all, Alan Silvestri did the music, who also did Back to the Future, and Predator. He was, again, pretty top line guy for this kind of fare back then. It's not that recognizably Silvestri. Like some movies, you could tell instantly it's him. This isn't really one of them. But it's pretty weak. The score didn't do much for me. But more importantly, the ending where Daisy comes and she's a gorilla soldier or whatever. It's pretty much just the ending to Back to the Future. It's like, it's about your kids, Marty. It is that ending. It's exactly the same. It's just like shitty instant tease for a sequel. And then, like, with Back to the Future, they hadn't thought about what they would do in a sequel at all. It was like a total throwaway tease.
And they hadn't for this either. But you know, I'm glad you brought that up, Greg, because that final epilogue has become the launching platform for the. Essentially, the spiritual sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie, and this group of guys who are really big fans of it for various reasons, and they've kind of come to terms with it over the years, and they wanted to keep some discussion about it. They've done a lot of it. They've tracked down a lot of the people who are involved in making it, and they've interviewed them and gathered a lot of really interesting facts about how did this movie turn out the way that it did. But they're fans of it. I mean, you know, I think they recognize its faults certainly, but they basically enjoy it. it for whatever reason, and they have committed themselves to basically writing the sequel as a comic book, and they're doing it like one page at a time. It's not complete yet, but it's pretty deep into it, and it starts off with exactly that scene. And that, you know, they said, well, I mean, when we were kids, we actually liked this movie, and we were really intrigued by this weird epilogue at the end. Where Peach comes back and she sets up the sequel, but then it never happens. So why don't we make it ourselves? And that's on the internet. You can go read the sequel to this movie in comic book form, and it looks pretty good. I only flipped through a few pages, but I was impressed by it actually.
There you go. And on that note, folks, I think it's time to draw a close this very special segment. I can't believe we just talked about that for an hour.
Yeah, wow. We can't even do that with like real movies.
Thanks for calling, Sonny.
Thank you for calling, Sonny.
You know what, though? It makes sense because we gave Super Mario Brothers more time than we did Prometheus, but it deserved it more than Prometheus.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This movie, in a lot of ways, is like a Prometheus.
I wish we would have talked less about Man of Steel and more about Super Mario Brothers.
There you go. Well, folks, if these kinds of conversations appeal to you, you can check them out every 2 weeks at crosstalk.com.
That's the only place you can find me. I'm never on a Nintendo World Report.
Well, you were on that episode we did in Boulder.
Yep.
Oh yeah. I never listened to that.
Yeah.
That's because I don't know.
There.
Well, give me the word, John. I'll put you on RFN sometime. I'd love to talk to you.
All right. Sure. I'd be happy to.
Except when you do, it has to. Yeah, when you do, it has to be focused exclusively on a really shit game.
Oh, I would love it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, folks. But you can check it out.
I'll just play Rise.
You can check out all that kind of stuff at crosstalk.com. That's crosstawk .com. And you can find that every 2 weeks. We talked about Unforgiven. In a couple weeks, we're going to be talking about Eyes Wide Shut.
Carl's pick for Christmas.
The most Christmas movie I could think of because there's a Christmas tree in every shot.
But we also do Thor and Ender's Game and, you know, all that kind of stuff too.
Exactly. And I guess this is the for real ending to the telethon, which is it's sad. You never really want it to end, you know. But believe me, I'm
building up so much speed. It's actually kind of hard to slow down at the end.
Exactly.
Of it,
I guess we just have to open that door and get on the floor because Tom's a dinosaur.
Was that song made for the movie, or was it like an existing pop hit?
That's
you can ask that question about so much in the film. Like that is the quintessential question about any element in it.
I mean, I definitely recognize that song. I didn't know if I knew it only from this movie or if it was actually like a radio hit, but I didn't look into it at all.
It was not a radio hit.
You know,
really?
The way that I'll end it here is just by saying boom laka laka boom laka.
Yeah.
The exact name. Oh yeah, Almost Unreal by Roxette will be in rotation on my phone and iPod forever. that's how I'm gonna get my girlfriend to finally murder me. Is gonna play Almost.
If only Nintendo would finally just wise up, go third party, release Mario games on Xbox, and then you could use custom soundtracks to put that over it, have the true Mario experience at last.
What if that was like a deep, deep Easter egg in like Smash Brothers or something? People would freak out. If like you got to like this deep level that no one, you know, you'd had to do all this shit to get to, and then the soundtrack for it was Almost Unreal.
Honestly, can you guys you remember Street Fighter the movie, the game? What if they did that for Super Mario Brothers the movie?
Oh,
the game?
That would be a mature third person action game.
Can you imagine like the digital motion captured Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo running around and jumping on these platforms and hitting dudes with their plungers? It'd be amazing.
Yeah, fucking Leguizamo gets a power boost when he takes his shirt off.
Yeah,
and Hoskins when he puts on the yellow suit like gets dance skills all of a sudden.
+4 agility.
Yeah, +4. So, oh god.
Hey, I wanted to say
+5 luck.
It's been a real pleasure talking about this movie with you guys. I thought it was really fun, and I'm very very happy with the selection and with how it went off. And I hope people found it entertaining and informative. And also want to say it's been wonderful to have Greg on the past 2 hours, and it's been a real thrill for me. I've missed him the past few times he's been on our podcast, and And I love talking to Greg, and I'm very, very glad I got to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice to be on.
Yeah.
It's nearly been a year since it was where we did the Majora's Mask retroactive. So
that's right.
It's nearly been a year for me. Well, it, despite the wouldn't have been the film I chose. It's probably my one and only contribution to the Bopverse or whatever. So there you go. It was a lot of fun.
Yes, we always have a good time. So thank you guys for doing this. Thank you, Carl and John, for submitting yourselves to this experience. And
hey, man, it's really the least I could do. It was for a good cause, and I was really happy to do it. It was awesome doing it live with everybody. Mm-hmm. Great to do with Greg. I really hope you come and do Bop with us one day. More than welcome to.
You all watch films so much sooner than I do. It's like the only films I ever go and see like straight away.
No, you can
like,
watch whatever you want, man.
I know, but you still talk. I like as little information as possible about films when I watch them. So
great. Yeah. If you've ever listened to an episode that has Stan Ferguson on it, that that's.
Not oh yeah, I'm aware.
It's not that he doesn't watch things that just came out. He just doesn't watch things. So you don't even need to watch anything. We just need a contributing opinion. Stan doesn't even give that half the time. So you're good.
But yeah, unless it's something like Gravity, where it's like obviously way better in the cinema, I generally don't.
Yeah.
Stan very recently downplayed his own movie of the month.
Oh, well, no.
It's not
he
really
didn't
that.
Choose it. He did it as a favorite and then hated it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Too bad. It's a great movie.
All right. Well, look. I've been, I've been pulling assistant duty all day, so I'm very, very tired, and I very much wish.
Oh, white man's burden, Carl.
Oh, God. No, actually, Carl has been working his ass off. What he's doing, you might not have heard from him very often, but what Carl's doing requires a lot of attention, and it requires an endurance, and it requires a commitment to be at his computer for a very long period of time while he listens to a lot of us have a lot of fun on this while he kind of hangs in the background and does our busy work. So Carl deserves a lot of credit for doing this, and I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, thank you. It's. If, like I said, like this gives me.
He's good. He's good. Carl, it's okay. This poor guy, Carl, his other computer just dropped.
But it's fine.
It gives you butterfingers. That's what it gives.
There we go.
Carla, isn't Carl like Mexican or something? Reagan, you're my favorite dude. And yes, wow. Of course he's Mexican.
No, he's not. It's. I don't even know. Are you responding to the chat? I'm confused.
Yeah. It goes. Isn't Carl like Mexican or something?
What does that have to do with anything?
Okay, who cares? That's hilarious. It didn't even have a question mark. That's the best part. There wasn't even a question mark.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. All right. Time to stop.
We are so tired, people.
Yes. Good night, everybody. Look for a recording coming soon. And thank you so much for contributing. All right.
Bye-bye, everyone.
And thank you so much for enabling this, the stupid, stupid thing that we do every year. Thank you.
Yep. Boom. Akalaka-laka. Boom. Boom. Boom.
Oh, yeah. That's not going to be it, is it? There's going to be more.